This is the National Council of Jewish Women. It is April 5th, 1999. We are sitting in the living room of Dr. Alfred Bloomstein. This is Judy Rubenstein.
And Howard Braun.
Interviewing Dr. Bloomstein.
Hi, this is Al Bloomstein. I'm delighted you're here.
Thank you. Could you tell us about your early life, please, when you were born and so forth?
Okay. I was born in 1930.
June
3rd, 1930.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were Samuel Bloomstein and Shirley Bloomstein, Shirley Yellen Bloomstein.
Where were they born?
My mother came from Bialystok, Poland, what's now Poland, what was then Russia. I think my father came from Minsk, but I'm not sure.
Tell us first about your mother's family and about how far back you might be able to remember or that they told you.
Let's see. My mother came here in about 1920, right after World War I. Most of her family came here before the war, but her sister, who lived in Kharkov, was having a baby at the time, and so she had to go and help her sister, who was having the baby, and then she got caught up in the whole transition of the Russian Revolution and all that happened thereby.
Mm-hmm.
But she finally came here in about 1920. I know my mother much better because my parents were married in 29. I was born in 30. And by 31 or 2, they had separated. So I grew up basically as an only child with a single mother. And
excuse me just a minute. Did they talk about the Russian Revolution and how it affected them?
Not terribly much.
Uh-huh.
Because most folks were here before them.
Mm-hmm.
It was her sister who was all of her other relatives. She had one brother and three sisters, two of whom were here, and one of whom was left in Russia through the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And I think her father had a grocery store in Bialystok. I had an intriguing experience that I'll talk about later. I happened to be going to Prague last summer, and here was a chance to go back to Bialystok and see where my mother grew up. In fact, all of her relatives were eliminated in the Holocaust, except for one cousin of mine, a cousin named Genya. And
what's
she
her name?
Genya, G-E-N-I-A.
In the last name?
Her original name was Zosman. She's was married,
mm-hmm.
And her name is married name was Hexter.
Mm-hmm.
So I told Genya that I was going to take a side trip to Bialystok, and she gave me the address of the house that my mother lived in. She knew it very well. It was number 1 Washingtonia, named after Washington. So I went to Bialystok. I thought it was sort of a dinky little town. It was somewhat of an industrial town, which had a major garment industry before the war. And there were no signs. Apparently before the war it was about 50% Jewish. So I looked up the place. I thought it would be sort of, my image on my way was that of a shtetl, but it was much more of a city, probably in the context of Poland, something comparable to Pittsburgh. in size compared to the big cities. It was one of the maybe half dozen largest cities of Poland. Fairly nondescript. We looked up Washingtonia, and indeed it was right next to a what was somewhat of a palace of an industrialist, not a royal palace, but an industrialist palace. It had a park about a square mile or so, and his home was converted into a med school. And right across the street from that was this Washingtonia Street. The house my mother grew up in was gone, replaced by a playground. But it was a rather moving experience to get to the place that my mother was in. Took a bunch of pictures and have been meaning to share them with my cousin when I get to see her. And she'll know what was left over. Very little was left over from pre-war period.
What did your grandparents do?
Let's see. I think my grandfather had a grocery store in Białystok. I know nothing about my father's family. And he came over in about 1910, I think. My father worked in real estate in Newark, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. How did they get to Newark?
How did he get to Newark?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother started, I think, in the Lower East Side, moved up to Prospect Avenue in the Bronx, and when she and my father split, which was when I was about two or so, we moved in with my grandmother. We had an apartment with my grandmother and my mother and myself. My mother started working in a bakery. Her sister's family, her sister Libby's family, had been in the bakery business, and so they gave her a job. And we stayed with my mother, went with my grandmother, who was my caregiver. My grandmother spoke no English. So as a young child, I spoke Yiddish to her.
Mm-hmm.
I was somewhat bilingual, I guess. Never really picked up on it after she died. She died when I was about five.
Mm-hmm.
And so we then moved in with...
What was your grandmother's name?
Minnie. Mm-hmm. Minnie Yellen.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband's name was Chaim Yellen. I don't know that he ever had a job here, but I've seen some writings about him that suggest that he was a very kind gentleman and sort of a senior member of his community. And I don't know anything beyond my grandparents. He died about the time I was born, so I never really got to know him, other than a man who typically had a yarmulke on and a rather large, not long, reasonably trimmed, but a white beard. And so when I was five, we ended up moving in with my mother's sister's family, my Aunt Libby.
What was her name?
Libby?
Libby Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Libby Brown. And her husband and two of her sons were in the bakery business, and they kept buying and selling bakeries. And so we ended up moving every 6 months to a year, and I kept changing schools until I was about 10. That was in 1940, and at that point my mother decided that I was big enough that we could be off on our own. So we moved off into an apartment right around the corner from a bakery she happened to be working in at the time. And that was in the East Bronx section of the Bronx in New York. Her bakery was on Hunts Point Avenue, and our little apartment was around the corner on Gilbert Place. And I was there till I went off to college. And so that was at, I guess I was about 17 at the time. So having popped from school to school for the first 4 or 5 years of my education, I ended up in PS 47 in the Bronx, which was pretty good, and then was there through high school. I went to high school at the Bronx High School of Science for 4 years, and
can we backtrack to your earlier years?
Okay.
For a little while. First of all, you said your parents were divorced. Was that unusual for people to divorce?
It was very unusual. Uh-huh. And my mother always talked about it as being separated rather than divorced. Mm-hmm. That there was, I guess, enough of a stigma of divorce that she never really talked about it as divorce, but as separation. Mm-hmm. But I subsequently found papers of a divorce. Their relationship was a very interesting one, and probably more characteristic of the times. He was from Newark. She was from New York. I'm not sure how they met, but I don't think she ever really knew him. He wrote very flowery letters, but was a very awkward man in any kind of social situation. She was a very outgoing woman. She was the epitome, as far as I can tell, of the stereotypical Jewish mother, very much devoted to her child. And so I grew up with this enormous devotion from this woman who worked very hard to make ends meet, but by God was determined to do so, was going to do all she had to do to make sure that her kid grew okay. She apparently had dated a number of men after the divorce, and viewed each of them in the context of what kind of father he would be, and I think found most of them wanting, and ended up not getting married until I was clearly ensconced somewhere else.
Oh.
And then ended up getting married to a man she was married to the rest of her life. I think my father, for a person in real estate, for an individual who had great difficulty in social situations, was somewhat of a catch-22. He was certainly not a real estate tycoon. And indeed, he was having trouble making ends meet. This was the start of the Depression. Mm-hmm. He was having trouble making ends meet. And my mother was being put into all kinds of uncomfortable circumstances of being told to live with his sister and a variety of living arrangements that she found unpleasant. Mm-hmm. And so wanted out, and ultimately, and I think found herself very disillusioned by the individual she ended up marrying.
Did he contribute to your upkeep?
Minimally.
Did you interact with him much over the years?
What we, every so often I would get a letter from him asking to meet me somewhere in New York. I mean, this was during my school years,
mm-hmm.
asking to meet me somewhere in New York, and we would, I would go, usually the place we'd meet was at the Paramount Theater, which was downtown 42nd Street and Broadway, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I'd say at least half the time he ended up not showing because of something that came up. So and we didn't do this all that often anyway. So as you can appreciate, the relationship was rather distant, and so every so often, I guess every 2-3 years, over Christmas he would take me out to Newark, and I would meet with his family.
Did he remarry?
No, he never remarried. Apparently, from all I can gather, he continued to have a crush on my mother. But she just would not, I think she was sufficiently disillusioned by him that never picked up again. And I think ultimately had lots of hostility to him. Howard's question about his support, there was very little support. So it was basically, she provided all my support as a kid.
Did he remember your birthday, even with a card, or?
Not that I can recall. He may well have, but if he did, it was probably sporadic. I think he was an individual who had enough trouble keeping his own act together. He had this little storefront real estate office that I went to visit on occasion. And he in 1967 he had a stroke, and so as his only child, I had a call, and so ended up getting to his office in Newark. We happened to be in Montreal at the time, at the Expo. I was there with my family. And so we stopped off there. He was in the hospital at the time, and ended up with a stroke and aphasia and everything coming apart. And he ended up living for 10 years in a wheelchair with aphasia. Which must have been very maddening. And I did see him a few times, but not that many times during that 10-year period. But apparently he had a number of properties in the slum part of Newark. And it was very interesting. I went around to a number of those places. And he eked out a living that way. He had sales contracts to the people who lived there. And apparently the people who lived there, that was a setting that this was a predominantly black section of Newark. And he would come in and feel comfortable, relaxed, sometimes chat, sometimes fall asleep. So it was the one occasion when I had a sense that he was in. Here was a setting where he was at ease.
Did he ever leave you anything?
No. He was essentially incompetent at the time that he had the stroke. And so I took over trying to manage his properties. At the time, I made a quick assessment of the value of the properties optimistically at about $75,000. During the 10 years he was alive, the properties deteriorated, the city closed them down, and as happened in many places, boarded them up. Mm-hmm. And then I had somebody managing the properties, and that individual ended up collecting rent, but sending me bills for repairs essentially equal to the amount of the revenue.
No legacy.
No legacy.
That's all my question was.
No legacy at all. And my mother, so he was a rather remote figure in my life. Mm-hmm. My mother, of course, was a very close figure in my life.
When you lived with your Aunt Libby, and what was her husband's name?
Nathan.
Mm-hmm. Did they have any other children?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They had, while we were living there, she had three sons, all of whom were married, and two mm-hmm. daughters, both of whom were unmarried when we moved in, when I was about five. One of them got married before I left, and the other one got married some years after. But it was clear to me that there was a sense of being a poor relative in someone else's home.
Uh-huh.
And
did this affect you psychologically?
Undoubtedly, uh-huh. undoubtedly, but I'm uh-huh. not sure I could articulate how, but I think it was, if anything, it was, I'll show them kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm. How long did your mother live?
My mother? She died in 1986. Mm-hmm. Or 86, I think.
Mm-hmm. So your very early years, and once you moved out with your mother, you were about 5 years old?
What? My grandmother died when I was about five.
Right. Oh,
then we lived
right.
with my Aunt Libby until
yes.
I was about 10.
Got
okay.
And then we moved on our own.
Got
when I was about 10.
So your grandmother was very nurturing, and she was a
I
very
I think
important
so, but it's tough to know because mm-hmm. that goes back to the pre-5 period.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember her kindly. And I think I have rather clear memories of the day she died,
mm-hmm.
and I was sort of shielded from her death and so on. Mm-hmm. But she died, and then we had to figure out how we were going to manage next.
Mm-hmm. So your years from 5 to 10 were not particularly happy?
Not particularly happy, mm-hmm. but... I remember that they worked okay.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of trouble at, you know, dealing with my cousins, my Aunt Libby's kids. One was about 6 or 7 years older than me,
mm-hmm.
and the other was perhaps 10 years older than me. One thing I remember of that period was... we would take a ride on the Fifth Avenue bus at night, my mother and I. If I was unhappy that day, she'd take me for a ride on the bus. And that was kind of pleasant. And I remember, you know, by the time I started school shortly after that,
mm-hmm.
I do remember an interesting, I was supposed to start kindergarten. And my Aunt Libby said, don't send him to kindergarten because people pick up diseases in kindergarten. So if you send them to kindergarten, they won't pick up the disease. So I think my mother decided that, in her wisdom, that if he doesn't pick it up in kindergarten, he'll pick it up in first grade. So you might as well send him to kindergarten where it matters less. I think I picked up measles and chicken pox and all the other childhood diseases at the time.
Was kindergarten unusual then, in those years, though?
Not particularly.
Oh.
I think it was voluntary, but
uh-huh.
I don't think it was that unusual. But also, I spent my summers at camp.
Where was camp?
From the first camp I remember going to, and I suspect I may have been 6 or 7, was a workman's circle camp.
Who was the member if your father wasn't?
What?
Who was the member?
I don't know. I have no idea. Somehow.
I thought that was a requirement.
I don't know.
My father was a member.
Did you go to workman's circle camp?
No, I didn't. I don't think you could afford the $7 or whatever it took. But anyway, you don't know who was the family member.
Or if anyone.
Oh,
but anyway, I remember it as a camp well met.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was there for maybe one summer or two.
Were you living with your uncle then, perhaps?
With my aunt? Yeah, I was still there.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, my mother joined a mother's club. It was a mother's club that had a camp in Mountaindale, New York, in the Catskills. And so every summer from there on out, till I was about, I don't know, through high school, I guess, or in the midst of high school, I went off to this, it was called Camp Eva in Mountaindale, New York. It's a place I visited subsequently. It's now taken over by some Hasidic group that runs the camp. But it was a group of a Jewish camp,
mm-hmm.
with a woman named Eva Leiboff, who was a social worker, who was the leader of the group and had this camp for kids. And that was probably the greatest stability in my life at that time, because I had successive summers and individuals who kept coming back, and I kept coming back, and we got to see each other during the winter on occasion, and so that was my stable period, or the stability of my life was after my mother.
Did you go there for how long of a period?
About 10 weeks.
Most of the summer.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I think it was one of those settings where, again, my mother had the sense that that there ought to be some place off the streets that her son goes
mm-hmm.
to, and so she found this camp. It was a cooperative camp. It was not privately owned. It was owned by this mother's club,
mm-hmm.
and so the fees were relatively small.
Mm-hmm.
I remember her salary at one point in time, I think somewhere in the 40s.
Whose salary?
My mother's salary. It was about $15 a week or so.
Were there many things?
And those were her only assets. I mean, her parents didn't leave her anything, so she really did an amazing job of maintaining herself and the son rather well.
Did you have feelings of wanting things that you couldn't have, or?
Probably, but not that I can recall. Mm-hmm. But there was a sense of, here's what we can have and what we
uh-huh.
can't have. And gee, we can't do that. I mean, there's no question but that in retrospect it was a sense of not having very much, but never a sense of deprivation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What, did you have many friends where you lived?
Well, for that first period, there
mm-hmm.
were, I remember being with some groups, but I don't remember any friends until we moved into the Hunts Point area, because I never stayed there long enough to have developed many friends. But I do remember some kids I used to pal around with who I knew at school.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more of a lonely period than a highly engaged period with others.
Okay, so when you moved into Hunts Point, you were about 10 years
old
then?
10.
Okay. Tell us about that period.
It was mostly during the war,
mm-hmm.
and I do remember that it was not unusual for us to be eating steak, and steak was unusual not so much because it was expensive, but rather because it took a lot of ration coupons.
This was during World War II, of course.
During World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow or other, my mother was able to manage to get steak every now and then. And,
mm-hmm.
and I remember this particularly because it just seemed surprising that we could have it. And said, well, we get it. obviously that there were black markets and all kinds of products, and she was able to get it. So I think it was a period. I remember being rather excited at the prospect of our going on our own. I remember feeling that I was going to be the man of the house, and that it was our thing. Mm-hmm. So I was really delighted at the point where we were there. Now, she worked as a clerk in this bakery around the corner from the house, so she was always accessible if I needed her. School was about 10-15 minute walk away. And it was a period when I did indeed find myself with a few friends that I got to know and know fairly well.